The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
A new survey shows that there are 1,274 people in Ireland who are living with asthma. No, that's wrong. That's wrong, isn't it? Because I'm joined by Professor Marcus Butler, consultant in respiratory medicine at St. Vincent's Hospital. And we're also going to be joined by Adele Aberton, who is herself an asthma sufferer. How many people? Because this number is definitely wrong.
You know, I think you're reading the number approached for the survey conducted by the Asthma Society of Ireland. At any one time, there's about 450,000 people in Ireland affected by asthma, Pat, and about 890,000 people in Ireland in their lifetime would experience asthma, because a large proportion of people's asthma can go into remission, particularly in childhood, as a lot of people know. But the Asthma Society for Asthma Awareness Week is raising...
Which is this week.
Yes, exactly. Is raising awareness of a worrying increase that we found in the levels of uncontrolled asthma in the over 1,200 people that you've mentioned who responded to the Asthma Society survey.
So this is a pretty good sample size, so it would be representative.
It's not a scientific research, but it's more of a survey. But it is indicative of the kind of problem that's reported internationally as well. Hmm. So we found that over half, 51% of the respondents who might be patients or the parents of a child with asthma had experienced an asthma attack in the last year. 24% had actually had that asthma attack in the last month. And there was also about a quarter of respondents who were relying on the use of a backup emergency reliever, blue type inhaler, to relieve symptoms on a daily basis, which is far, far too much reliance on such a medication.
Yeah. Now, we'll talk about the different kinds of inhalers there are. But first, a more general question about the diagnosis of asthma. You get the impression in recent years that every little wheeze is now asthma. And whether or not that is a proper diagnosis, or whether people are being told they have asthma or think they have asthma when they have not, and other people who wheeze their way through life have asthma and have never been told they have asthma.
You raise a very important point. I mean, there's a lot of overdiagnosis and underdiagnosis of asthma that's reported again around the world. This was always the case even before the pandemic, but alarmingly during the pandemic, we lost access to one of our key tests because it was an aerosol generating procedure, which involved blowing strenuously into tubes in an indoor room. So for obvious reasons, that test had to be curtailed. And therefore, there was a lot of sort of treatment trials done for asthma diagnosis, showing a response to treatment, worsening when you come off treatment, improving when you go back on treatment. And that's one way that you can, in more resource limited settings, get a diagnosis of asthma. But we prefer that there's objective measurements performed in pulmonary function laboratories, where we find excessively variable airflow when blowing out hard into a tube. We also can even measure airway inflammation in the airway sample with a test called FeNO, or we can find the presence of mucus on imaging, such as CT scans.
So you can be definitive.
Absolutely.
If you've got the resources.
If the right tests are performed, yes.
Okay. Now, let's go back to then the use of relievers as against the use of other inhalers. Bring us through the spectrum of inhalers that are available and what they are used for.
So I like to tell patients that inhalers are just like brown bottles with white caps that have medications in them. They're different types of drugs found inside those storage devices, if you like.
An inhaler. So that's a delivery system.
Inhaler is just a delivery system. It's what's crucial is what's in it. And a lot of patients can get confused with this and think that more is better. And unfortunately, if they take excessive amounts of certain medication, they can expose themselves to the dangers of asthma. So over-reliance on typically blue-coloured inhalers, they've often contained drugs like Ventolin or Bricanyl or... similar Salomol, Easy Breathe is another one on the market. These are inhalers that are there as a backup to ease breakthrough symptoms of tightness and wheeze and breathlessness that can happen to an asthma patient if their asthma is too active or undertreated. And it also is a red flag to an asthma healthcare practitioner that this patient's asthma is probably undertreated and at increased risk of harms.
Now, what is the proper regime? When someone has had a definitive diagnosis of asthma, what is the proper regime?
So it depends on how affected they are. But for patients who are less affected, a low dose of an inhaled anti-inflammation treatment, which is from the world of medicine called steroids, sometimes gets a bad name. But steroid is a really helpful and good and important and life-saving medication in asthma patients when taken correctly through an inhaler. And the reason for the inhaler is not to be awkward. It's because the drug is too dangerous to take in tablet form every day. And so instead, it should be inhaled and you even rinse and spit out water after you've inhaled it to remove any unwanted steroid from the body, so that it only remains where it's needed in the windpipes.
Okay, so that's what you do. Now, how often is that taken, or does that vary according to the severity of the person's asthma?
Right, it varies according to the formulation of the type of steroid that we're talking about, the preferences of a patient. A lot of patients have difficulty taking a regimentally twice a day, for example, and a once-day regimen might suit that person better.
Some patients do at the same time every day, when they get up in the morning or before they go to bed, whatever it might be.
International guidelines are even moving towards the fact of recognising our patients better and the fact that most patients are averse to medications. So an awful lot of asthma patients won't take medications when they're well. And that's a problem that we're now finally getting around to with the use of anti-inflammatory relievers. These are not conventional blue inhaler relievers. They're relievers that have a little bit of inbuilt anti-inflammation treatment. And even one solitary day of using those instead of using a blue inhaler can reduce severe asthma attacks, with a very high level of scientific research proving that point.
Is it the case that asthma sufferers who have that definitive diagnosis should be taking some sort of inhaler every day? In other words, prophylactic or preventative medication?
For all but the most infrequent and mildest of symptoms, yes, which is most asthma patients should be on a daily small amount of inhaled anti-inflammation treatment, in the opinion of most experts worldwide.
Is there seasonality attached to asthma?
There's certainly seasonality effect relating to the triggering of asthma. So asthma is an inflammation of the windpipes that comes and goes, and the symptoms are very variable over time. They can be absent for periods of time, but they're often brought on or triggered, is the jargon we use, by exposure to certain substances in the air, such as environmental pollution, indoor air pollution, tobacco smoke. It can also be brought on by allergies. If you have allergic asthma, a very common type of asthma, where house dust mite is the biggest indoor allergen and pollens would be the main outdoor allergen. And that is seasonal for the latter, whereas house dust mite is all year round. It's perennial allergy.
Yeah. How difficult is it to find out what the trigger is?
Sometimes it's very obvious. The most common trigger I should mention is actually viruses. I mean, so COVID-19, for example, we now know is a very well-established and newest kid on the block as a trigger of asthma. It's a more mild disease, of course, for most people, but it's a very highly prevalent trigger of asthma. And there's very good evidence that's came out of Korea, which has access to 97% of people's health data through a national insurance database, that even the use of the vaccination for COVID-19 reduces the onset of new cases of asthma in those who have been exposed to COVID-19 subsequently.
So the vaccine has another effect that we had not imagined, perhaps.
Where COVID-19 triggers asthma, vaccination lowers the new onset of COVID-triggered asthma.
Now, as I mentioned, Edel Aberton is on the line. Edel, good morning.
Good morning.
When were you diagnosed?
I was diagnosed years ago when I was around 19 years of age, so going over 30 years ago. I was attending a GP, but I always had a cough as a child, and I suppose there was less known in the late 70s and 80s about asthma and the different ways it presents then.
So you were a wheezy child?
No, this is the thing. I wasn't a wheezy child.
No.
I had more of that kind of cough variant asthma. So I used to cough a lot. And then as I started getting older, going into my 20s, I started getting more frequent chest infections as my asthma increased in severity.
Now, you also contracted COVID. How did that impact?
I contracted COVID, unfortunately, 2 years ago. So before COVID, I was very involved in the local Fit for Life, and I was able to run a 10K in about 55 minutes, which is good for my age. And since then, I've tried a few times to go back to running, but I just haven't been able. So it has definitely increased the severity of my asthma symptoms, and it changed the nature of my asthma as well. Before, my asthma would kind of gradually go downhill, but I've since developed onset of, I would get out of the blue sometimes an asthma attack, which wouldn't have happened to me before.
Yeah. Do you believe this is part of long COVID and that eventually it will subside? Or do you think that it has changed the nature of your asthma permanently?
It's very hard, I suppose, to know yet, because it's only 2 years ago. My inkling that it has changed the nature of my asthma. I suppose to add, I'm lucky in one sense in that I was vaccinated, and I do believe that really saved me, because I was very, very sick and I had to go into the hospital to be assessed. Because I know my husband was very worried about me at the time, and for a day or two we were on the verge of maybe calling an ambulance. But yes, I think it definitely has changed the nature of my asthma.
Now, what is the nature of your medication regime? What do you take every day?
I'm on quite a lot. So I suppose we're on what we refer to as kind of step five medications. So I'm on the SMART protocol, which is one of the inhalers, that a type of inhalers the professor was speaking about. It has the steroid and the long-acting bronchodilator twice a day. And then I'm on another inhaler that helps with the cough. That's a preventer inhaler. And I'm also on a older medication called Unifilin tablets. And then azithromycin, which is a type of antibiotic, but it's used to take the inflammation down in the chest. And then on a nasal spray to treat any hay fever.
Now, do you take this medication 3, 6, 5 days a year?
Yeah, I have to. If I don't, my asthma would be worse. So even with that amount of medication that I'm on currently, I've unfortunately needed steroids about 4 or 5 times in the last 12 months. But that's just the way my asthma is at the moment. However, since starting to go back on the azithromycin there early in the new year, it has started to improve again.
Okay. Do you find it scary?
I suppose I don't. But this is the thing. I think when you're asthmatic yourself, sometimes you risk becoming complacent because you get used to it. And I think sometimes it's more frightening for the people around us, like my husband or my kids or my sister. They would see me getting worse. And sometimes while I'm asthmatic for years, I mightn't necessarily realise I'm as sick as I am because you kind of get used to it.
Yeah, I just think it would be terrifying not to be able to draw breath easily.
Yeah, I suppose that's the one thing. With the nature of the way the asthma has changed, I have had a couple instances where I have got quite frightened where an asthma attack has come on all of a sudden because I hadn't been used to that. But I suppose I'm lucky. I have at home as well in terms of emergency medication. I have access to a nebulizer, which has really, really helped. Mm-hmm. So in an emergency, I can put that fast-acting medication into the nebulizer and take it and try and relieve my symptoms.
And does that work quickly?
It usually does. But obviously, if I'm having a particularly bad episode or I'm very unwell, it usually would necessitate a call to the GP. Because when you're heading towards using a nebulizer, that's usually a sign you definitely need to get back into your GP and get reassessed. But generally, I have a very good GP, and I suppose I know my asthma quite well right now, that I would get into contact with them before that would usually happen.
Yeah.
And monitoring your peak flows every day is really important as an asthmatic.
So that's important, to have a good relationship with your GP practice so that...
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, I'm extremely lucky. I have a fantastic GP. But what has been a massive help for me as well is the Asthma Society nurses. They offer a fantastic service. They've really guided me through things like knowing what questions to ask when I go into the respiratory outpatients in university hospital. Simple things sometimes you mightn't think of. And they're also very good at just chatting with you and trying to assess where your asthma is at and what maybe could be done to improve your asthma control, questions maybe you can ask with your GP. So I suppose sometimes we can become, when we're in the health system, you can become very passive. But with your asthma, you have to become an active member of your own care and get involved. And that's where the Asthma Society and the resources they have given me has been absolutely fantastic.
And that helpline, is that open 24/7 or...?
No, I'm not sure the exact hours, but I think it's office hours. All the information is on asthma.ie.
Okay, asthma.
And they offer a WhatsApp chat service as well, but I tend to use the phone appointments. So when you're offered, when you contact the Asthma Society and ask them for a appointment with the asthma nurse, the appointment time usually lasts up to 30 minutes, which is fantastic. So the nurse, for me, often would call me either before I'm due to go to outpatients or just after.
All right, Adele, thank you very much for sharing your experience with us, and also for that advice, both about the Asthma Society and the help they give, and about having a great relationship with your GP practice. Professor Marcus Butler is still here with me. It is important that people are knowing about their own condition.
Absolutely. Adele has very elegantly outlined a key principle that's only lately become more evident to healthcare professionals, which is that we need to have shared decision making in asthma care. We can't be dictating, you know, what the treatment should be, because it doesn't often marry with the patient's lived experience of that condition. Adele is putting up with a much more severe, biologically aggressive form of asthma that's causing her to have far too many steroid tablet events. We found in our survey, for example, that 43% of our respondents had had two courses of this in the last year. 24% had actually had three of these courses. And these tablets pose long-term harms to patients. A much higher rate of osteoporosis can happen even after a single-digit number of lifetime courses of these tablets. It can cause cataracts to happen later in life.
So not to be messed with.
The steroid tablets are to be avoided by using inhaled steroid and other medications that Adele has mentioned on a regular basis to keep it under control.
Some of the contributions coming in. I had asthma as a kid. I was hospitalised numerous times in Harcourt Street Hospital. It went away at about 12 years of age and resurfaced in my 40s. Is this normal or should I be concerned? I stupidly smoked from 18 to 38, but I haven't smoked for 10 years. The only medication that helps now is steroids.
It is normal, to answer the question. It's very much now the case that we've recognised the high rates of remission, often for decades before it can return later in life. We're also a very hot topic right now among asthma doctors all over the world is trying to induce remission. We're borrowing language from the rheumatologists, for example, who use drugs earlier, more aggressively to try and get the disease to sort of vanish and become less detectable. And smoking, unfortunately, is a major risk factor for unstable asthma. But I would encourage your caller to also get tested to make sure there is not a component of a related disease called COPD, so that the treatment can be optimised in her case.
Another one, my 24-year-old daughter is an asthmatic but has controlled it for years. She hasn't had an attack or required medication for 4 to 5 years. Last month, she got the most horrific asthma attack, ended up in hospital on steroids, nebulizer, etc. It seems there's a spike in these asthmatic respiratory infections lately, as so many people are suffering this year. It's quite frightening to watch a person gasping for breath.
This illustrates a very disturbing feature that we're more worried about mild asthma than we used to be. We used to think it was trivial. We now know that mild asthma, although it's very lower rates of serious attacks nonetheless can happen and can even be tragically rarely fatal in what was previous mild asthma. So that is part of why international guidelines have changed to encourage the as-needed use of an anti-inflammation reliever. Even if it's as simple as taking a shot of a brown inhaler every time you use a blue inhaler, that can give protection against these rare attacks that happen to mild patients.
Just a question about the winter season. So many coughs and colds and splutters, you know, the so-called six-week cold that everyone seems to have. Does that impact then on asthma numbers?
It's a trigger, as I've said, for true asthma. But one of the things we have to think about when we're confronted with a possible diagnosis of asthma is things that mimic asthma. And certainly, you know, post-viral bronchitis, for example, would be a very common entity. But if it's recurring symptoms long after, many weeks after the thing has died down and it comes back weeks later, that's more suggestive of a chronic disease such as asthma.
Another one. Any thoughts on the new montelukast side effects study?
So montelukast is a drug that's been around for a long, long time. It's a safe additional drug to use as a controller of asthma, both in children and in adults. But there are, and well-flagged, rare neuropsychiatric side effects with this medication. So it's important to always have a discussion with your healthcare provider, and that you should be aware, as should your healthcare provider, of these risks. They're mentioned in the product literature and the package insert for these drugs, and to immediately stop the drug. For example, you're experiencing vivid nightmares, for example, that don't go away. That could lead to mood disturbance or more serious side effects.
So be aware. Read the leaflet.
Yeah.
How many people
do? Risks and benefits to all medications.
What are the chances that a two-year-old who coughs a lot after exercise and in cold weather is likely to have asthma? They have needed inhalers, stroke steroids for wheeze with viral infections in the past. Should they have an inhaler on standby just in case?
Now, I'm not a paediatric respiratory doctor, but in asthma, this is a well-recognised presentation in those under the age of five and under who can't really do breathing tests to confirm asthma. So there has to be an index of suspicion where the symptoms are suggestive of asthma. Those are certainly symptoms that are suggestive of asthma to a paediatric specialist, and they may well warrant a trial of low-dose inhaled steroid to see if it can alter the behaviour of those symptoms for the better.
Another one on the same paediatric question line. Please ask about the diagnosis of very young kids, age 3. What are we looking for?
So it's these variable symptoms brought on too easily, such as from laughter and play, where there's coughing whenever they exert themselves, or heavy breathing that's noticeable to a parent coming and going. That's a big flag. Or if they hear an audible wheeze on a regular basis, that's a major red flag that child might have asthma.
And a final one. My daughter suffers from asthma, takes 2 inhalers, but still can struggle breathing while playing sports. The local GP doesn't feel she needs anything stronger, but I'm not sure that's the right advice. Should she be on stronger meds? Has your guest any guidance? Someone struggling with sport a bit?
So exercise is so vitally important for all of us, and yet it can also be a trigger in under-treated asthma. So we typically, for those who are very active in sport, we encourage them to pre-medicate beforehand with the aforementioned blue inhalers. It's one of the exceptions to the rule where we like to use a blue inhaler in the scenario of pre-exercise. So 15 to 20 minutes before intense activity, as much as 6 inhalations of a standard 100 microgram Ventolin inhaler, for example, would be good advice. And a lot of athletes in professional sports do this, actually, when they have asthma.
But they should
consult
their practitioner,
and they should be in as part of an asthma action plan.
All right. Well, this is Asthma Awareness Week, and my thanks to you, Professor Marcus Butler, consultant in respiratory medicine at St Vincent's Hospital, and before that, an asthma sufferer, Edel Aberton. Thank you, Edel. Also,
the Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance,
weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.